Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Say, if you want to interact with the Creative Control with Vish Khanna show beyond just listening to it, which, by the way, more than enough. But if you want to do other things, you can like the show on Facebook, Creative Control with Vish Khanna. We're on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at V-I-S-H-K-R-E-A-T-I-V-E, Vish Creative. You can subscribe to the newsletter at vishkhanna.com, V-I-S-H-K-H-A-N-N-A.com. If you want to write to me directly, creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. Or you can... No, wait, that's it. That's pretty much it. Subscribe on iTunes. Write a nice review on iTunes. Why don't you? I don't know. That seems to be helping. I think that's it. Thank you. Let's listen to the show.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Hey, how you doing? You watching House of Cards? My wife and I have been watching House of Cards. We're in the second season. They launched the second season last week, and they put all the episodes out at the same time on Netflix, so you just watch whatever you want. So we're about 5 or 6 episodes in, and I watched the first season, too. I'm still not sure I like the show. Do you like the show? I'm not sure I like the show. It's like a better newsroom. I don't like the newsroom. It seems kind of like the newsroom, except it's not about news. Although it is kind of about news. Anyway, I would recommend you check out House of Cards, and then we can have this discussion later. A lot of dancing on this show lately. Dance people. We had Katie Ewald on not too long ago, talking about dance. And I guess I want to dance. I want to learn about dance, because on this episode, a discussion with Amy Henderson, a noted Toronto-based dance artist, and Jennifer Castle, a musician who I'm very familiar with and I'm a huge fan of. They're working together on a project. It's called Henderson Castle Voyager. It's being staged at the Winchester Street Theater, located at 80 Winchester Street in Toronto, February 20th to 23rd, and then February 26th to March 1st in the year 2014. And a very interesting discussion about their practice and their work. And I mean, Jen's doing really interesting things. She's completely improvising songs for each performance, and it's just kind of stream of consciousness. And then Amy, Amy's got her dancers doing kind of the similar stuff, in a sense, improvising on the spot. It's very interesting. I got to see a rehearsal. So what you're going to hear is myself speaking with Jen and Amy somewhere in the Toronto Dance Theater after I got to watch them do a rehearsal. And it was very, very interesting, and I think you'll enjoy it. And then you're going to hear... As best I could, I took a field recording of some of the audio of Jen playing one of her songs, one of her music pieces. It's a song. It's a kind of song. And then the dancers are dancing while she's doing it. So you're going to hear footsteps and... Yeah. So if you feel like dancing, this might be the episode for you. This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Book Thief, Her, Nebraska, and more. And on February 20th, Old Man Ludica and Jordy Lane play an all-ages show at the E-Bar. The Bookshelf is an independently owned culture hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. Visit bookshelf.ca for more information.
running from the bills. If reading books was money, if spinning records was investing, if drinking was consulting, baby, we'd be rich.
Studio B of the
D.
Oh, D. I said Studio Boom. I thought I was being very clever. Studio D. Studio Doom.
Studio Doom. Studio. They do something. It's Studio C for church. Studio B for basement. And then they do have something for why you can how you can remember.
Maybe dining. Because the kitchen's right there. It could be like studio.
Studio dining. That's pretty good, Jen. You're on a roll already.
Thank you, yeah.
So we just saw, or I just witnessed this amazing, I guess it's a rehearsal. Do you use the term rehearsal in the dance world?
Yeah, we do. I love the term rehearsal because it's, it feels like it's, we can, it's one of the only things you can do that is both intentionally working on something and making choices, but also simultaneously undoing and reworking constantly, and it feels like a really important state of mind. And so yeah, that was definitely a rehearsal, but hopefully not so different from the performance.
I only ask because once Mike Watt, who was in a band called The Minutemen and does other stuff, he once said that there's a distinction between bands and actors or theater people. Bands practice, actors rehearse. That was his distinction. So it came to mind because we have Jen Castle over here, a musician, and you in this world of, well, it's not theater, but it's dance. And I just wonder if practice and rehearsal means anything to you. Because I also was just thinking about how when I was watching this rehearsal, the intersection between like randomness and practice, like the intersection between chaos and practice is really meeting when I see something like this. I'm wondering if you can each talk about why that space is interesting to you.
It's actually great that you bring up the word practice because we use it so much mm-hmm. to talk about what the performers are doing. They're practicing something, and the thing we've been trying to make is a practice, or at least that's the way that we talk about it. But then it's very interesting that then we still use going to rehearsal, mm-hmm. which is... I used to do some other types of movement, and that was not so dancey. And we talked about practicing, which I always took to mean that if you didn't know how to do it, you were practicing. If you were in a constant state right. of needing to get better at something, you were practicing. But now I think about rehearsal like that too, mm-hmm. that you never really know what you're doing and you have to keep on working on it.
Right. Employing your practice. You practice your practice.
Yeah.
In a way. Jen, do you have any feelings about this, the distinction between a practice and a rehearsal as an artistic being?
Well, I relate to it especially with this project. The only other thing that, I kind of think of it as practicing, right? Practicing, practice-based,
yeah.
where it's like working on the work, but in the with the idea that like, there's something that can change, but that you're always giving it, you're always working. So it, to me, becomes a bit of like yoga or something, like you practice, but there's never an achievement point. It's like, as soon as practice comes to mind, there's no place that ends. You're always in practice.
Yeah.
That's how I think of it.
Okay.
Especially with this work, which we started calling practice really early on. It was like, this is practice-based. And I think everyone got their heads around it that way.
So when you say practice-based for each of your respective practices, is that what you mean, or?
Just for us colliding and working on the piece we're working on together, Voyager.
Okay.
How we contained it and we could all practice it, and it was accessing a certain mind
right,
set.
Right, I want to talk a little bit about the conception of Voyager, and in particular, I don't know if this resonates with you, but the humor of the piece, what I just saw, was remarkable. I mean, with both within, I mean, maybe it's worth describing this to people who haven't seen it yet, so that that might illuminate it for them in terms of how the humor has unfolds, because I think it unfolds in a very organic way. But can you maybe talk about the conception of the piece first, and then maybe we can get into some specifics about where the expression and the two worlds kind of meet?
Well, I guess the very beginning is I was invited to make a project here, and at the time, I'm usually busy with some question that is bothering me, and then I try to figure out a way of colliding it with some invitation or some opportunity that I have or some opportunity I invent. And the kind of thing that was bugging me a little bit over the last couple of years was why I was a dance maker, but I sort of had a problem with dancing. I say that very flippantly, but what I mean is that I wasn't so sure how to employ movement on for movement's sake, which is one way of thinking about dancing, in a kind of conceptual or critical way that also celebrated dancing for dancing's sake, and that didn't kind of use it to prove a point or to be ironic or any of those things. So I was coming out of a project where we did a similar sort of investigation of one of the core kind of elements of choreography, and in that case it was unison movement, and trying to think about synchronized movement beyond irony and beyond authority, I suppose. And so with this, the thing that I kind of alighted on was, how can we make a project that's about constantly moving? If dancing's about movement, what about just going for it and just always moving? And then for some reason, what came to mind when I thought about a collaboration that I thought would fit this was a songwriter, because of the way that I understood songwriting to kind of contain a kind of like approach to maybe a kind of poetry that would emerge over the course of making a song, but then also something that had a kind of like integrity in and of itself. And I think I was trying to understand also how to approach narrative in a dance, and songwriting seemed to be a way to encourage that while also allowing some kind of like abstractions and poetry to exist at the same time. So that brought me to invite Jennifer, and then Jennifer came in and kind of told me what I was doing.
Jen, what is your contribution to Voyager then? Amy kind of had this concept of it, and then she invites you. And then from what I can tell, you are, I don't know how to put it. Maybe you should put it. I don't want to insult you, because I don't want to, I don't, it's a treach, it's sort of treacherous ground here, because I feel like you are improvising a lot, but you seem to also be following a notebook. So can you explain this? How does this work? What are you doing?
Well, I am participating in the Voyager project by being practicing the tasks. Amy's been specific with creating movement via a set of tasks, like not repeating yourself, not sequencing yourself, not developing things, but just from the beginning it was articulated that what seemed important to explore was, when you arrive at a place, you also leave it and you never go back to it. And Amy approached me with this concept of writing an hour-long song to go alongside the piece, not necessarily speak on behalf of the piece, but to practice it musically. So through the time we've spent together, what has emerged is definitely improvisation, but it follows the tasks I'm referencing constantly. The dancers are referencing themselves in their bodies, so it ends up being this very spur of the moment, non-repetitive,
constantly interrupting yourself or your thought process with asking yourself to leave the place you're in. So if you're in a mood or a genre or a rhythm or a beat, you simply acknowledge it's there as you leave it and move on. So this creates, over the course of an hour-ish, it creates a type of music that is a song, but follows not only my own imagination, but my imagination via these set of tasks and just reveals itself as it goes. But I feel safer in an improvisation way because it's not out of the ether. It comes from these lenses that are applied to the thought.
Right. You say tasks, which suggests a kind of regiment, but what are you looking at in that notebook of yours?
Well, I'm playing piano and singing. And playing a few other small instruments. But what I've found has been the most important thing thus far is to be prepared with lots of stream of consciousness writing. So that way it's not so much what I'm singing is the important thing. But sometimes I just think about a thought and I just stream of consciousness in the moment. Other times every time I'm on my way to the Voyager rehearsal, while I'm here, anything I think about when I'm thinking about it, I write down. Mm-hmm. And in the process, all of these words and phrases accumulate and then I can use them. And the phrasing of the words end up falling where it all ends up being part of this.
Yeah. And you were singing this song for about an hour.
Yes.
And I'm curious, what you just finished it maybe 15 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
What do you retain of that experience?
Not
right
much.
Now?
I know I spoke a lot. Or what do I retain about what I did?
Yeah.
Sort of a general feeling of just like lots has come through me, but I haven't necessarily been fixated on anything in the past, so I've let it all go. I know I spoke a lot about space this time, which was surprising because I hadn't reread any of my notes, which is what I'm committed to doing, not reading them before I start, but just writing all this stuff and then opening the book and starting. There was a lot of space talk.
Literally,
today.
Like outer space.
Outer space talk, okay. And things that I think about and things that are triggered by these sets of experiments just end up coming to light. And it's interesting.
Right.
As a songwriter, it's very interesting. As somebody who remembers her lyrics by trade, it's really interesting to just have them like pages. It feels like pages are burning I'm reading them.
What occurs to me is that I think some people would probably agree that you are a fairly earnest artist. Like you're an mm-hmm. artist who puts forth very heartfelt sentiments.
Mm-hmm.
I've found pieces of humor within them,
mm-hmm.
but this is like a whole other side of you. Like this is it's interesting to me that I would describe this as your unguarded self.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you personally, so mm-hmm. I know that you have a wacky streak or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
Like you have a good sense of humor.
I have a sense of humor.
Yeah, you do. You're funny. Yeah. So this comes through in this means of expression.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you about what's within you? Because in a sense, you've kind of lost yourself
mm-hmm.
in this moment, mm-hmm. in this hour,
mm-hmm.
and you're just letting go
mm-hmm.
of yourself. Mm-hmm. And all of for you heard people laugh. There was a mm-hmm. small group of people,
mm-hmm.
but you elicited laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was coupled with movements mm-hmm. and things like that. So what does that tell you about your own kind of approach? I mean, do you see how this could be applicable to your Jennifer Castle life, like your persona, if you will?
It's definitely been, it's definitely changed the way that, I mean, it's been, and that's talking about the word practice comes up again. I think that it will definitely infect my regular practice, which is much more edited.
Yeah.
And like, if there's an idea I have, the idea is turned in certain ways. And then I'm always interested in the lowest common denominator of feeling. So I really try to edit almost everything I can out of my own personal songs. So what's left, I'm like, has to be there.
Yeah.
That's usually how I know something's done because nothing else can be taken out without it falling apart. Whereas this has been a practice of more is more,
mm-hmm.
but just letting it all out. And it hasn't been without its hardships. And I mean, I think where it feels incredibly collaborative is that Amy's work forces me to
open up in and share on the spot. And I'm not opposed to doing that. I love improvising, but I've been very, I've been glad to have an opportunity to do it where it feels safe because these tasks are given to me. And by doing them, I just have trust that this work
okay.
comes out. So it's interesting. It shakes things up.
Right.
But I like humor.
No, I know you do. Yeah. And then that's why
I'm glad it rears its head.
I find that a lot of people that I admire who have these, and I don't want to just, when I say persona, it suggests a kind of guise, but mm-hmm. I do think that there are people mm-hmm. that have a certain aesthetic, and then when you talk to them outside of that, they're totally
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's a comical mm-hmm. aesthetic, on, mm-hmm. like a public comic thing where they're inside, they're brooding, you know, mm-hmm. when you talk to them, or vice versa, mm-hmm. like you know, a balladeer who's like mm-hmm. a complete hilarious person mm-hmm. outside of it. So, Amy, I think what I'm getting at might be true of a perception of your world, that it is serious, self-serious, that it may not have humor within it. Whereas when I attend improvised music concerts or good ones, or when I see a performance like this one, all I'm thinking is like, this is hilarious. The human body is so ridiculous and we can do so many things with it and no one wants to really acknowledge that. Or they do if it's in a broad comedy context. But do you think that the general public is missing out on how connected they might be to a work like this?
Most of the time I just worry that they never get here at all. Less about what happens when they're here, and then I think then we have a lot of space and time together to hopefully make the work shareable for whoever's in the room. But you know, I worry a lot about who never thinks about coming and how that just denies us getting to meet each other. But I've been thinking a lot about this conversation you're having about Jennifer's other practice and her songwriting. And there's something that I feel that I, maybe this is something I also witness in the dancers, is how everybody needs to kind of reuse what they know in other contexts. And there's something about when Jennifer and I first started talking, and also I really was familiar with her music, there's something about restraint and kind of this really filtered and clear way of presenting a set of feelings or ideas. And there's something about this project that does that too, but you have to do it instantaneously and you have to do it in a moment. And so then the collection of all of those moments is there's a kind of abundance in them, but in each moment one has to make a set of very quick decisions that for me really use everything Jennifer knows about making a 3-minute song, mm-hmm. except for it's in this kind of like tiny little space. But yeah, things are funny because they're surprising. Not And that is, you know, life at its best for me is when I have no idea how things are working. And so mm-hmm. I try to make projects where people can trust a state of not understanding how things are working while also working on something, and then try to offer that to a public. So that we're just seeing things kind of not make sense and try to reorder them really quickly. And then in noticing how we might recognize something that we didn't think we could recognize, that there's a kind of hilarity in that.
Do you see any kind of parallel between what you're describing in these moments to how we as a people might function in our regular lives? You know, like those kinds of instinctual reorderings that you describe are things that people do as soon as they leave their houses or as soon as they get up in some ways. Are you amplifying that basic survival instinct?
I hope so. I like to think that all I'm doing is noticing things that are already going on. I try not to invent stuff because I don't feel creative enough to do more than just notice. But yeah, somebody last night who came to see a run was talking about exactly that. And he said,
I think we're already doing what you guys are doing. It's just that we don't have the awareness. And there's the thing we've been practicing so much is heightened awareness. So as soon as you start noticing things, like, things are totally bonkers. So these practices that we've been working on and these ideas about heightened awareness are incredibly useful in my daily life, because it makes, like, the most tiny thing just seem like a comet. Mm-hmm. and it's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, you said something earlier that I'm trying to wrap my head around with a lot of art these days, particularly art that might be construed as outsider art or whatever that means, which is, you worry more about them, people being here to even experience this, more than how they're going to process it. You just want them to be here. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious if you know why or why not, why they may not be here, and whether you have an idea of how to invite them, to entice them to come and see this reflection of, you know, this artistic reflection of how our lives work. I mean, have you thought much about that? Either of you?
I go back and forth. Part of me thinks stuff like this is small scale, and it needs to be small scale, because then it doesn't need to orchestrate itself according to, like, late capitalism, basically. But saying that, the trick is just personal connections. Like, getting people here is about me meeting people and inviting them to come. So the same old thing that people have been doing forever, which is being social and practicing and hosting and being convivial, is what the only thing I know that works. But I think I don't know how to do it on any scale besides, like, you know,
I think that's
a small scale.
I think that local aesthetic of scale is paramount to where we are today. I mean, I think appreciating the scale of what, not living too far beyond your means, or reaching and being able to be in the contact with the people that you can invite to your show is, like, that's how I think about music too. I think, why do you have to be a songwriter in your neighborhood and try to find to go to all these other neighborhoods to sing your songs?
Yeah.
It's like, you can be the songwriter you can be one of the songwriters on your street. And that's how it's always worked with music and art, is we've reflected, artists reflected the culture around them, and the cultures were smaller and more, you know, local.
But there's a tendency for people external to a situation or a scene or a happening to not really glom onto it until it seems to have its own momentum or ambition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's talking about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone in our case would be, what, the media, these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm curious how you measure or...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Whether you can kind of articulate what your ambition level is for something like this, it sounds to me like you're trying to be reasoned and realistic about it, but at the same time, you want people to see this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, what is the ceiling for something like this, or why would you put a ceiling on something like this? Because I think when I see it, it's enriching. Like, it would enrich anyone who sees it.
I feel like that too.
I feel like it makes musicians out of all of us and dancers out of all of us. It's the sort of work that you recognize yourself within, because you recognize thinking and you recognize movement and you see those processes happening. And so it's interesting to watch the type of dance that shows you all the things you can't do with your body. It's incredibly rich to watch the dance that makes you feel like you might be a dancer, or you might know a thing or two about movement after all.
That's just it. When I see this, it seems, and this is not to shortchange or undermine anyone's practice.
No.
I, as someone who maybe has worked within the arts, I guess, or in artistic practices, can kind of understand or comprehend that there's been a level of work and practice.
Absolutely.
We keep using the word practice, yeah. But at the same time, when you watch it, and if you don't have that consideration, you just be like, what's the big deal? I mean, the one guy did the splits today. That was pretty magical to me. But I mean, there's all sorts of physical things going on that are beyond me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but a lot absolutely. Of it seemed, intuitive, like just happenstance movements that I just didn't think the body moved that way. And I would think that would teach anyone about how your mind works or how their minds work, like the dancers, the singing. It's just interesting for people who are interested in the way humans function.
Yeah.
So why aren't more people interested in this?
Well, it's yet to be seen how many people are interested.
We don't know.
Might be a gangbusters 10-show run.
I do think I have a responsibility to share this with as many people as I possibly can. So part of, especially because I'm not working really hard to perform it, I feel that it is part of my job to, at a moment where I'm the most petrified about doing so, because as you get closer and closer to showing something, you don't want to tell anybody about it because you're so scared. it's at this moment where I'm like, I just got to write as many emails as I can. I got to make as many phone calls. I've got to, call my friends and get them to invite their friends, and it's that kind of, it's like thinking of that as part of the work too, I think is maybe something that a lot of us, we take for granted that there's all of these mechanisms and like micro fame and all of these other ways that people arrive at something, social media and stuff. But, what is our responsibility to say, hey, this thing that I'm doing feels important to me and maybe it's something that will be important to you. Mm-hmm. I need to push myself out of my comfort zone and get you there. Mm-hmm.
But you're also, from what I understand, I'm only recently becoming more acquainted with you and your work. Jen, I know rather well. But my understanding is that you are a very highly regarded in your field, in your realm. What do you want me to call it? In your practice.
Discipline, yeah.
In your discipline. And, if you wanted to, I suppose, you could make a life for yourself, a successful life for yourself, maybe in Europe. Maybe in a place that is more, understanding, more supportive. What is it about, what keeps you in Canada, and how would you compare those two environments? I'm just saying Canada and Europe, but maybe, I guess, North America versus Europe. How would you compare the kind of appreciation level for what it is you do?
I've gone around and lived in some other places, and there was something about when I came to Toronto, which was a place I never thought I would ever live, let alone visit, because I grew up on Vancouver Island and I went to school in Montreal, and Toronto is the place you skipped. And when I came to Toronto, and it took a couple of years to feel this way, I just had this overwhelming feeling that it was worth it to make art here, and the kinds of connections and the kinds of people that I was working with and continue to work with felt like they nourished a part of me that I haven't found happens in other places, and also was a place where I could invite collaborators to come and work with me. And Toronto kind of was like, hey, you can stay here and be here. And it's almost like a kind of like bad parent kind of thing. It's like, it's not really taking care of us, but it's somehow allowing things to happen. And I've always felt that there was space for me to do my work here. And maybe one of the reasons why I've left other places is it felt a bit like tight or competitive. Sometimes I feel lonely in Toronto making the kind of work I make, but loneliness is not necessarily a bad thing. It means you have to kind of like reach out, mm-hmm. try to find other friendly people.
Okay, well that's Toronto, but do you think that there's a general perception or misperception of your work in this country? Is there something that you kind of have a sense that we've been talking a lot about trying to galvanize people around the idea of this piece, for example, but mm-hmm. would you say that that's symptomatic of something larger about your work?
Not my work, just kind of contemporary art.
Mm-hmm. What does it say about contemporary art and the perception or appreciation or lack of appreciation for it?
I'm not sure there's a lack of appreciation. It just feels like the amount of appreciation there is small scale. And so it seems like we want things to function and to be regarded on particular scales. And I just wonder about that sometimes. Of course we need to make a living and there's all of that. But I really try to actively resist the collision of livelihood and art making, which is something that is in this country and especially in my mm-hmm. field is like deeply ingrained with each other. And so it's really, and this may be one of the reasons that I work a lot with musicians. Not because musicians don't need to pay their rent, but because there's often a really different relationship between how we get by day to day and how we get by in our art. Mm-hmm. And that is a very healthy tension to keep for me. And then when I think about why do I want more people to see my work, I want to make sure that I want them to see it, not because we want to sell more tickets, but because we actually think that this work is going to function with more people. Mm-hmm. And something like this, where the audience is 116 people, I don't know if it can get bigger than that. I mean, we can do a longer run, but I don't know if,
yeah.
And I don't even know if we can do a longer yeah. run. Like, I don't know how long you can look at your notebook yeah. and make up new stuff. So there's also like a scale of the work that, and people have asked me that, they're like, do you do this because you think this is the only size you can work at? But I don't think I'm doing that. I think I'm making work that feels like the shape and size that is creating the kinds of reciprocity I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the relation? Like Amy just highlighted an important point, I think, and I don't want to sort of misinterpret it necessarily, but it does raise the issue of kind of livelihood versus creative fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And how and why that might be particularly difficult in this country. Jen, I don't know, do you have anything to compare it to? I only ask that because, I mean, Amy's lived in other places, but do you see that as a traveler? Like, do you feel like we have it difficult here? Or, because I know that we're in some places, we're the envy, we have grants and...
I know. It's complicated.
Yeah.
You go to another country and you really can't complain in many ways. But... yes, it's difficult. It's difficult because you have to actively find ways to carry your work with you throughout your life or avenues for your work. And time is short and money's tight in general. But I think that somewhere in the struggling becomes like, or tension, as Amy better put it, or that tension, if it can keep healthy, then why ask your work something so logical as subsistence when you're also asking it the illogicalness of creation or for that to be something it can give you is like, so it's, I can't ask, I feel like I would be asking the wrong person for money if I asked my art for money.
That's fair. And I can see that. And I've asked these questions of people these days because I'm going through the same thing in my own work where I'm just like, I've never felt better about the work I'm doing, mm-hmm. but I'm not making a living from it. Mm-hmm. And then, but the work itself demands the time that... Mm-hmm. I used to make a living from it, mm-hmm. and now I don't quite make the living I did. Mm-hmm. But it requires that time. if I did something else, I would just be like, I can't wait to get back to doing the thing I really need to do. It's within me to do it. Mm-hmm. You two both have that within you. How do you reconcile that with the reality of living and the fact that it's not something that's appreciated enough? I mean, when I say, what am I saying? I guess I'm hiding the idea of like, no one is paying you enough money to do what you need to do. And why is that? And it's a very crass question on some level, but it is important. And I don't know if it's there's a general sentiment in this country when I talk to my fellow, you know, workers in creative work who mm-hmm. do creative work, but there just seems to be this like, I don't know what's coming. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. That's and the general sentiment.
Yeah. Is that how you feel?
Yeah. I mean, this situation we're in right now is pretty wonderful and we're being treated wonderfully and have a lot of
very
opportunities
supported.
And we're supported. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I guess what you kind of have to be okay with is this, temporary kind of status of a project, which mm-hmm. then again brings us back to the practice that we've been making, mm-hmm. which is how to sort of be okay, completely invest all of your curiosity and all your interest and desire in the moment that you're in at this very second. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to kind of like on a macro level do that so that I can be satisfied and deeply engaged with whatever it is that I'm doing right now? Because my problem is that I get into this forward thinking thing where I worry about next week or next month or next year, which isn't very productive no matter what. I mm-hmm. mean, it's just kind of not, it's kind of checking out. So I try to learn a lot about living from these projects because
they
on the kind of like the body in space, like just doing stuff feels like it's like as grounded as it gets in terms of like rules about how you might go about doing a bunch of other things. So I just spin out. I get kind of wigged out about the future and like people who are a lot more secure than Canadian artists or less secure also get worried about the future. So
I'm just used to consistency. And it's funny that that's what we're talking about. Ultimately, we're talking about consistency in any regard. And it does strike me that when I watch Voyager, it seems to be its strength is its lack of consistency. So it's kind of this weird reflection of your, not only your practice, but your methodology almost. Deep stuff, eh?
Yeah, consistency and inconsistency. You know, it's like a that piece is about keeping on, keeping on in a way, right? But in this way that there's no foresight in it. So it's also like very easeful.
Maybe it seems to be what's going on. I feel like everyone's living in the now a little bit, and that now can comprise, you know, very heavy-handed aspects, like heavy-handed aspects of the past, but there is this kind of fleeting, I don't know, it's almost apocalyptic what we're talking about. It's almost
it is end times, but like or end time sentiment, but it's an opportunity, I think, to reinvigorate the word work, which has been so distorted in our society. I think that what I see is a willingness to work but to divorce work and job and what they mean, and that, you know, I understand we have to work, but how much I wish a job on no one, but I wish the ability to work for everyone, because from the work we get our lives, from the job we are kept from our lives or things we need to do socially or culturally to take care of each other.
Yeah.
But it is a risk to leave the job that pays to work with ourselves and our communities.
Right.
And we do it and we talk about it and we don't know how it works
and
out.
We try to raise our families
and not
worry about it as much as you can.
And we work hard, often very hardworking people.
Yeah.
Very hardworking,
very
but
hardworking.
Very poor.
Very poor, hardworking people,
Poorish.
What do you want to say about Voyager in terms of details? I don't have it at the ready. Can you tell folks a little bit about this run and where it's happening? The details, you know, like you were telling someone.
Logistics.
You know, you're talking about sending a bunch of emails. Can you basically recite one of those emails from your head so that people know what they need to know about this thing?
I'll do my best. So the show opens Thursday, February the 20th, and it plays Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 p.m. And then there's a Sunday matinee at 2. Mm-hmm. And then the following week, it plays Wednesday to Saturday at 8 o'clock. And it's at the Winchester Street Theater, which is on the corner of Winchester and the street that's one east of Parliament. Mm-hmm. Winchester is north of Carleton.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's a beautiful old church that has been repurposed as a space for dance. There's a school here and a company, Toronto Dance Theatre, and a whole bunch of studios. And this is where we've been working, and it's where we're showing it as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's excellent. And can you talk a little bit about what's next for both of you? If you can, I know we talked about how that wigs you out. But do you have any plans that you can share with us in terms of things beyond Voyager?
Yeah, I'm going to remount an old project that is a kind of another experiment in a durational movement practice called Relay. And we're going to go on a little tour in Belgium. And then another project is going on to Slovenia and Croatia.
That's great. That sounds amazing. And I'm sure you'll be well appreciated in those places.
I don't know. You'd be surprised.
I hope you are. I hope you are. Jen, what about you?
Well, I am finishing, when I finish up my work here with Amy in the Toronto Dance Theatre, I'll be releasing a record soon. So I just finished a record. That will be coming out soonish. And just onwards and forwards, making more work and figuring it all out as I go.
When you say soonish, what do you mean?
When I say soonish, I'm being very optimistic.
You're done.
I'm done, but I'm just waiting to see who's going to put it out and when.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just waiting for those like details to reach me.
You've previously worked with Flemish Eye.
Previously worked with Flemish Eye, yep. And I think this in Canada, this next record will come through Idéfix.
Oh, okay.
For proximity's sake.
Right, Toronto.
Yeah, it just, you know, it's just makes more sense.
You worked with them for Deloro.
I worked with them for Deloro.
Another band, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just kind of feels like consolidating a lot of efforts into one place. And so I'll be touring and doing all those things you do with a new record.
Do you have when you say you're done... It's been mastered, it's been...
It has been mixed.
Mixed.
And it is with people that are wondering whether they would want to put it out or not.
Okay.
And at that point, I will master it and do everything post-production.
Do you have a name? Does it have a name yet?
It does have a name. I think it's subject potentially to change, but at the moment it's called Pink City.
Pink City?
Pink City.
What is Pink City? What does that mean?
You'll have to find out. You have to go deep in that record and find out.
Some kind of concept behind?
I think it means something to everyone.
Yes.
It's named after a song.
It's named after a song? Yeah. By you?
By me.
You named it after a song?
I named it after a song I wrote. Appears on the record.
You named it?
I named it.
Okay. It's named after something I named.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. It's named after something I named.
Well, it's great. I wish you all the best of luck with this Voyager. It was really a pleasure to speak with you both. And I just wish you the best of luck. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Oh, Jen, you're a musician.
Yes.
Should we go to a song from one of your records?
You might as well just.
Maybe we should.
Mm-hmm.
What should we go to? Just pick anything. I think I probably have it.
Anything.
Is there something like recent or new? What's the most recent thing that people might have heard?
The most recent thing would probably be something from my last record. So play anything off that. Or if you have a clip or anything from what you just saw or
heard. I do have a clip. Should I play that?
You could run an excerpt and entice the people.
I have no idea what it sounds like because I just... held some microphones up in the air, but let's go with that.
Yeah,
this is
play a snippet from Voyager. The play a piece of music that will never be replayed again.
Can you can you, just for the benefit of nothing really, name the piece that I'm about to play that you don't know what it is and I don't know what it is. Just give it a name. Stream of consciousness.
Sliced bread.
No.
No?
It's not good for you. Don't eat sliced bread.
No, don't.
No, sliced bread's probably fine.
Okay. Then we'll go with that.
Sliced bread. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.